Okay, so hello, welcome to the second Pocket Gamer podcast of the week. Well, I suppose it's the first of the week. This is the Monday podcast, but it's kind of part two of last Friday's podcast. That's a bit confusing.
Yeah, we've hamstrung ourselves there a little bit, haven't we? It's going to be odd, but yeah, it is the second podcast of the week from within 7 days since we recorded the last one, if you will.
It's happening within 7 days, but if you're thinking in terms of calendar weeks, you'll get all confused. Basically, this is part two of the podcast, which started last Friday. And it's hello from me, Rob Perrin, and it's hello from...
me, Fraser McInnes.
Yes, and Chris isn't with us, just as he wasn't last time. Just as he wasn't last Thursday.
No.
That's a shame. Never mind. This week we're talking about Driver and also Geospark, two recent iPhone games.
Yes.
Driver's just out, actually. Just the review went live on Wednesday evening, last Wednesday, about 5 days ago, if you're listening to this. I'm going to get... The chronology of this is going to confuse me throughout, I think. But never mind. So what should we talk about first?
Shall we talk about Geospark first? Because it's probably the game less people have heard of.
Fewer,
you're quite right.
Let's talk about Geospark. I'll go first. You'll have more to say about this because you have reviewed it for the site.
That's right, yeah.
So Geospark is a game which resembles... it's one of many games which resembles Geometry Wars, in that you play on this grid behind which is just blackness, and things that happen on the game board distort the grid. It's a classic, isn't it now?
Yeah.
Classic game visual style, started by Geometry Wars. Who did Geometry Wars?
It was...
Jeff Minter, was it?
Nope, it wasn't. He did Space Giraffe. Geometry Wars was done by the same company responsible for Project Gotham Racing called Bizarre Creations, I think.
Yeah, okay. I could be wrong.
That.
Yeah, you might be. You might be right, you might be wrong. At this stage, we just don't know. But this game, Geospark, what you do in it is you have these kind of floating shapes that kind of hover around, and you just got to touch them and they disappear. Or you touch one and you drag it, and as long as you drag it so that it collides with other shapes that are the same as it, then they both disappear. But if you make it collide with a shape that's different from it, it destroys. They both blow up, and it's game over. It's kind of like a metaphor for some kind of weird tribal thing where if you mix with people from other tribes, you die. That's how I like to see it.
Are you trying to say that this game is obliquely racist?
I think it's overtly racist.
Okay.
So that's Geo. I mean, think about what it's called, Geo. Geography, you know, which obviously, as we know, affects not only topography but also...
Do you know what? I think we should abandon this train of thought immediately.
Okay. Yeah. We would like to distance ourselves from any suggestion that Geospark is racist. So that's it. And that is basically the game in its entirety. There's very little else I can say about it, except that it's quite fun. It's typical iPhone. Isn't it really? It's kind of cheap, cheerful. It's well produced. It's original. I don't think any gaming platform produces more originality than the iPhone and the App Store.
I couldn't agree more. Definitely.
So it's very original. It's very fun. Perhaps it won't keep you interested for years and years, but it's well worth the look. What do you think?
I agree that it's fun. I think it's, you know, despite the fact that it's clearly, to say that it's borrowing from Geometry Wars is being very kind. It's outright just stealing. It's slicing out Geometry Wars' look wholesale and applying it to its own game. But it does so with, I think it's fair to say it does it with a fair amount of style. It does carry it off quite well and it does look good. I suppose it's a compliment to say it looks like Geometry Wars instead of, you know, a rubbish imitation of it. But the gameplay, as you've explained, is very, very different from Geometry Wars. And it is actually quite an original gameplay mechanic. And the whole thing about dragging instead of just tapping is that you get score multipliers for doing that. So you can amass points much, much more quickly by tapping and dragging same shapes and making them collide. But obviously, the balance is that, you know, there are shapes creeping onto the screen from the edges all the time. So as the screen gets busier, it makes it more difficult to drag to get rid of shapes. So you have to kind of be careful not to get too greedy with your score multiplier and to spend a decent amount of time just tapping shapes to get rid of them, even when there are multiple shapes of the same type on screen. Which is quite a clever idea, because it means that you're kind of always fighting against your own greed for points as much as you are fighting against the number of things that you have on screen to do. So I quite like it. One of the things that struck me about the game was that it's really, like, when you, from the moment you press the icon to boot up the game to when you're actually playing it, it's literally seconds. There is no title screen, there's no splash screen. It just comes up with the series of symbols. And there's a large, like, kind of four circles arranged into kind of like a diamond formation. And the top one is the play button. So, you know, I played that. I tapped that when I first booted up the game, expecting that to maybe skip an intro or something like that. And then, you know, that dumped me straight into the game, and that was it. I was playing it. And that, it was weird. I don't know. I was somehow affected by that. It was a bit of a shock to the system.
I was confused by it the first time I played it. It took me a while to work out the rules, and it doesn't... You're right. It doesn't have any words, this game, whatsoever. There are no words that I've seen so far anyway. Everything is just is in symbols, which I suppose helps them with translation. It means they can sell it everywhere and they don't need to worry about it. There are some words just about the studio if you press I, but basically the instructions, there's a question mark if you're confused, so you press that, and all it does is it just plays out a series of scenarios, and from that you can work out what's happening. So it's all very abstract. What it reminds me of is something I read in what it shares with Geometry Wars is that it's really kind of cut down. It's got no extra kind of frills. It's got no story. The graphics are kind of deliberately simple to the point that they're obviously not trying to represent anything other than elements in a game. You know what I mean? They're not. There's no spaceships. There's no aliens. There's no good guys or bad guys. And the shapes are purely shapes, just like in mathematical notation. They're just purely there to differentiate themselves from other types of shapes.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of something that one of the Edge writers said about Geometry Wars in some article. And he said that it's a deconstruction of gaming, and that's exactly what it is. It's a complete reduction.
Yeah.
The principles of gaming and game multipliers because of that, I think it's really good. It's pure. It's a pure gaming experience.
It's true. None of the actual game elements are imbued with any sort of motivation. You're not, like, these shapes aren't doing anything apart from merely existing, and they react in a certain way just because. So that, you know, as you say, there's no narrative tacked on, and there's no. You know, the actual shapes themselves, there's nothing about them to try and betray any sort of reason for their being. They just are. And that's quite cool. I agree. It is pure. The other thing I was going to say about the game that it does have, which I think is an increasingly common and a feature that I'm actually getting to grips with and using more and more, is Open Feint. Integration, so you can go and post your high score, and I think that's really good. I didn't realise until quite recently, I have to confess, that Open Feint is actually compatible with Twitter as well. So it's actually a solution for using Twitter for posting your high scores as much as a solution for actually comparing high scores with other Open Feint users. So glad to see that in there as well. One thing I would say, however, and the main criticism that I gave the game in my review, it got 6 out of 10, is that basically you only get one life. So if you're chasing a high score, so you've got a high score of around 10, 15,000, by the time you get to let's say 9,000, things are starting to get a bit trickier. And when you die, that's it. You've got to then, you know, go back to the start and trudge through another 10 minutes until you can get back to the point where you're actually in the competitive range for beating your previous best score. And I think adding, a simple lives system, just a three strikes and out kind of thing, would be less frustrating. But yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that makes the second Geometry Wars, and we're going to have to keep comparing it to Geometry Wars, there's no choice because it's just so similar in look and nature, is that in the second Geometry Wars game, it's all the modes that they added and all of the options that kind of make it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be able to tweak. And I can see why they did it. I can see what, because they just wanted to make it really stripped down and really pure, and you just get one life. And it's almost, I can imagine them being almost principled about it and saying, no, this is the way it's got to be.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. It could have done with being a bit more accessible. But it's still, you know, I'm kind of in favour of it. I think I'm going to keep, I played it purely, you know, to talk about on the podcast, but I think I'm going to keep playing it afterwards, which is always a good sign.
But yeah, the thing I think about it is that basically it's I have actually come back to it as well more often than I thought I would. So it is what it does. It must basically have some element of addictiveness, which is a good thing. But yeah.
Okay, so that's Geospark. It's 59p, isn't it? So that's well worth it, I would have thought.
Definitely.
So that's very good. And the other one is Driver.
Driver,
why don't you talk about Driver first?
Okay, I will. Driver is a franchise that I was never that well acquainted with, you know, on the home consoles where it started out. And it seemed to be one of those franchises that for a couple of years there was a lot of buzz around it. People were really excited about it. They were really kind of enthusiastic and positive about it. And then in the space of a couple of kind of sequels, it kind of killed itself. There was one game in particular, I think, it got really bad reviews, and it was kind of sort of held up as a kind of poor man's GTA clone. And the thing about that is that it is a poor man's GTA clone, but on the iPhone, because there aren't really many compatible experiences, it does work, and it is compelling, I think.
It came out before GTA, though, didn't it?
The original Driver?
First Driver. Well, yeah. Because it would be a clone of GTA 3, but it came out before GTA 3.
Well, see, the thing is, the games that came out before GTA 3 only included driving, you see? But then in the next when it came around to the next generation of consoles, the PS2 era, Driver was one of those licenses that was actually quite late in making the jump from the previous generation to the next generation. So by the time Driver was released on the PS2, GTA 3 had already happened. And also one of the things that they did when they released the next-gen version is that they added on-foot third-person sections as well. So it kind of veered away from just being a game about driving and actually being a much more comparable experience to GTA. And there are no... In the iPhone version, there are no... so far as I know, anyway, so far as I've played it, there are no on-foot sections. It's all driving. But it's impressive, I have to say. It's really polished for a start, and the cars look really good, and the city, though sparsely populated, also looks quite good, and it really is that experience of, you know, chasing between waypoints to complete missions, you know, usually with cops in hot pursuit, and to that end, it's very successful. One thing that I would say about it, and it's quite a big thing, is the controls, which are so often the undoing of these sorts of games, I think. With Driver, you get three options for control. You can either have like a kind of D-pad where there's kind of like four arrows in the left-hand corner, and the left and right ones obviously steer you left and right, whereas up and down have got different functions. And the down arrow is actually the handbrake, which makes doing a handbrake turn really difficult, because you have to kind of try and mash both the direction that you want to turn in and the handbrake with one thumb, and I found that quite difficult. So then, finding that difficult, I've been experimenting with both the accelerometer and the analog stick style control systems, which then place the handbrake on the other side of the screen, which definitely makes it easier to pull a handbrake turn. But for some reason, the steering has been, I think, tweaked in such a way in both the accelerometer and the analog stick controls where it's not nearly as responsive. So the car has got a really dreadful turning circle and really you can't manoeuvre tightly at all, which makes it really unruly and difficult to do. So you're kind of battling against the controls a little bit. But despite that, I actually think it still manages to be quite a lot of fun. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it is. With the controls, I mean, yeah, you're right about the analog option. It's pretty horrible. And it seems, I don't know if it's just me, but I found the stick would just kind of flick out from under my thumb way too often.
Yeah.
So I'd be trying to steer, and then I'd be wondering why I wasn't. I'd look down, and it was centered again.
Yeah.
I think because it's just too easy for your finger to wander off the side of the screen, I think, basically, in the heat of the race or of the chase. But I actually don't really mind the default control mode, which is just the D-pad. I didn't even try the accelerometer because I actually hate accelerometer steering in games. I haven't ever really got used to it, and so for that reason, I vote no. So I didn't even bother with that, and I was very glad that D-pad was the default, and I played with that, and I thought it was okay. I think virtual D-pads are still problematic in that there's nothing physical to touch, and there's no, like, even haptic feedback would improve it a bit, so that there was some kind of palpable feeling.
Yeah.
I think touching the screen, it isn't ideal. You have to be very careful. You have to be very conscious of what you're doing all the time, and I don't think that's ideal. But I didn't mind it. Like, the whole thing about handbrake turns and stuff, it wasn't perfect, but it was doable. I thought the handling and the steering were actually not too bad. What frustrated me about it, yeah, so it's the original game, isn't it? It's the PS1 game.
Is it really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's from what I remember of it. It is, yeah. It has all the same bits.
That's cool.
But that's the only driver game I've played in my life. So, and I thought it worked. It works well. It's one of those things where you know that the app has done a good job when you're criticizing it for the same things that you criticize the PS1 game for. And that's what I find myself doing. It's like, it's how it works as an iPhone app. That's fine. All of that, that's an A, I think. You know, I would give it an A for doing it properly. It's got some unavoidable kind of problems. Maybe it could be better, could be slightly better, but basically, I think it does a good job of, GameLoft has done a good job of taking it to iPhone. But the game itself, I think, has got problems. And I kind of don't think it's okay to release. So it must be going on a 10-year-old game now. And I think there are certain cases where that's okay. Obviously, the classic being Monkey Island. I think there are certain games where you can get away with releasing something that's 10 years old. Most of the time, I think you need to update a little bit, as the iPhone Monkey Island did. And if you don't do that, then you're in trouble. And I don't think Driver really updates at all. So it's still got this really obnoxious level of difficulty.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're driving around, the police get wind of you and they chase you and you have to lose them. And that just feels like, after being able to, in GTA, after being able to just like run down the pavement, knocking people over, run red lights, and do all this stuff, and like in front of the police and get away with it, it feels a bit annoying to get chased by the police for running a red light.
Yeah.
Even more so, it feels annoying to be chased by the police, but they're not, like, you know, in GTA, it's the reaction of the police scales up. So if you've just got one star, then the police, they'll follow you for a bit. And if you drive away from them fast enough, they'll give up and that's it.
Yeah.
If there are two stars, then they get a bit more interested. If there's three stars, it becomes, you know, genuinely inconvenient.
Yeah.
In Driver, it's just as soon as the police catch wind of you, you run a red light and they ram you.
Yeah.
So they're trying to knock you, they're trying to kill you, basically, for running a red light.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly, incredibly annoying, I think. And it's not good AI. It's not very clever.
No.
When I played Driver in the first place, it was all right because there was nothing really better than it. So it was amazing playing this weird kind of open world chase game. I was thinking, this is great. But then everything that's happened since has demonstrated that that's not good enough in itself. And the first mission, so you rob the bank, then you've got to get back to the hideaway. So you've got to drive quite carefully, which I was... No, I wasn't doing. I wasn't driving very carefully when I did it. But I got into a chase with the police, but I thought, well, never mind, I'll just lose them. Because you can't end the level until you've lost the police.
Yeah.
So I got near to the hideout, drove off, meow, lost them, came back, but they're near the hideout. So every time I try and get back to the hideout, I get, they go, vroom, 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 and I have to drive off again, and every time I come back, they... Yeah, so it's incredibly frustrating.
That's a pretty major flaw. Yeah, that's not very good. Yeah. Something else I was going to say about it as well is that I'm sure that this game has been designed, obviously, with catching the broadest range of iPhone handsets in mind. Of course, being a Game Loft game, that's undoubtedly the tactic that they've taken. But I think that this is an ideal candidate for something that the 3GS could benefit from, a slightly souped up version, because it runs really smoothly on the 3GS, and it's really, all the animations are really fluid, and there, you know, there's quite a good draw distance, but it does feel like a ghost town. There's no one around at all, and you know, I understand obviously this is a port of the original game, and they probably don't want to create new assets for it and that kind of thing. But it would have been nice to get the feeling that this is actually a more more fully rounded virtual world. And I'm sure the 3GS could handle that, and it would be nice to see that. But I don't think we're going to see that, so never mind.
Yeah, but so that's the problems with it are just the problems that you would have if you were to buy the game on a CD and try and play it on your PC now, or play it on a PlayStation 1. They're pretty much the same problems you'd have with it. It's... Technically, it's a bit behind the times, and in terms of gameplay design, it's behind the times. But having said that, I was working in the office yesterday, and I loaded it up, and the art guy, Paul, you know, was over playing it, and he downloaded it straight away. He was impressed. It's an impressive game.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones where you show people, and they go, "What are you talking about?" In the office yesterday, it sparked this whole conversation about technology. It's a conversation I like to have quite often. About you know how amazing it is that something that would you know would have cost us lots of money, and we would have had to play on big under the TV consoles, we can now play on our phone. And how if back then someone had said, "Did you know that in 10 years' time you'll be able to play this on your phone or your MP3 player?" Well, first you'd say, "What is an MP3 player?" they'd say, "Well, it's like a personal stereo." And it's like a personal CD player, but with no CDs, just files that stream music into your ear. And you say, "Oh, okay, well, that sounds good. And what else did you say?" And they say, "Oh, well, you'll be able to play Driver on it." You'd go, "Ah, get the fuck out of my face," you say.
Yeah,
you're pulling my leg. And yet here we are, and we're doing it. And that Driver is one of those games that makes you think that.
Yeah,
it makes you think, this
it
is
does. Incredible. Definitely.
So it's very, and what is it? It's $3.99.
I think it's
yeah. It's not a cheap one. So yes, it's not cheap for not for an iPhone game, certainly. It's above average, isn't it? Average would be $2.99.
Yeah.
But it's if you like Driver, here's another question about it. Does it count as a retro game yet?
That's the thing. It's funny. You know, in Edge magazine, they've got this time extended thing. And as the months go by, the games seem more and more recent to me. And it's worrying me because it makes me feel old. And so yeah, I think that's probably kind of the same situation with this. This feels to me like something that's actually still relatively recent. But it's actually quite a long time ago that this came out, you know. So, I think it does qualify as retro.
I think it qualifies as retro. Well, if you just take the same, let's say 10 years, I'm not completely sure about that, but I think it's about 10 years. If you take that same 10-year period and apply it to 1990 and 1980,
yeah,
that's definitely, you're definitely talking retro then, because you're playing Super Mario World or something in 1990, I think that was about then, and you look back 10 years and it was like Space Invaders, and you definitely call that retro then. So by that logic, I think... it is a retro game, and retro games in a way they get a pass, don't they? Like if you're into retro, this is why I'm not really, even though I kind of like games from when I was a kid, I wouldn't say I'm a retro gamer, because I don't forgive them in the way that a lot of retro gaming enthusiasts seem to.
Yeah.
But they seem to. It's like how someone will drive around in a 1950s car, and it doesn't matter that it's going much slower than everybody else's, and it's costing them a lot more in petrol. It's good in and of it because it's old, and I think a lot of people have that attitude about retro gaming, which I don't really have.
But yeah, I find that hard as well. I find it hard to kind of turn off my my critical brain, and I can't stop looking for the flaws, because as we've discussed before on the podcast, the sorts of flaws that you look for and how much negativity you attribute to a certain type of flaw is entirely dependent on where you are on gaming's timeline. So of course now with the App Store, we're actually judging games much harder than we were at the outset, and that same principle, you can extrapolate that out, and I still tend to do that. Even if I go back to a game that I loved, like Doom, I'll still go back and enjoy it, but I think maybe a little less every time,
Yeah, Doom, I don't know about. I played that and talked about it on the podcast, and as I was playing it, I was thinking, am I having fun? I was having a little bit of fun, but not as much fun as if I would be having if I were playing Braid or Geometry Wars or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, never mind. That's still. Would we recommend it? This is a good final thing to say about a game. Do we think it's worth the money?
Yes, because there aren't. As far as I'm concerned, it's the leader of the pack in its genre, for the time being. I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes actually quite a popular genre within the next year, and this game starts to look like so much old retro guff, but for the moment it's up there. So yes, I would say yes.
399. I would say 399 only if you are, to whatever extent, a retro gaming enthusiast and you want to play Driver as it was on your iPhone. Because if you want to do that, then this is perfect. It's a very, very good conversion of a game that may or may not be acceptable to you. But for $3.99, it's not bad. But I might be tempted to wait a little bit if I were you. Give it a couple of months, it'll probably be 59p.
And it'll be updated as well, so it'll be better.
Oh yeah, there'll be people in the city.
Yeah.
So that's Driver.
That's Driver. That's it done. So are we going to quickly rattle through the games we reviewed on iPhone on the site this week and then call it a day?
Oh, yeah. Good idea. Yeah, we said we were going to do that. Let's do it. Let's follow through on that promise
okay,
to ourselves.
Well, I'm booting it up now. Okay. Have you got it there?
It's okay, I've got it.
You've got it?
Yeah. Okay, so let's start from Outer Empires. We reviewed Outer Empires. That review went up last week. Outer Empires is like EVE Online. It's a big kind of open world trading game, which has got, and you can play it across PC, Facebook, and iPhone. Like this, you can have the same profile running in all three. So you could do some stuff on Facebook, and then on the journey to work, you could do a bit more on iPhone. So it's very good from that point of view. The only problem is there are some technical niggles, and for that reason, it got 6 out of 10. But it has promise. Watch out for updates for that one. Ace Combat 11.
Oh, this looks exciting. I haven't played it though.
Yeah, it didn't get. It didn't. I think this got 6 as well.
Oh really?
Tracy gave it 6. Tracy Erickson, because it's too short, basically.
Okay.
Good graphics. It's all good, but it's got a pitiful number of levels. Never mind. Maybe update downloadable content. Maybe we'll buy more levels. I don't know. But anyway, that's that one. Monopoly, we reviewed. Are you interested in Monopoly at all?
Yeah. Not on any sort of gaming console, if I'm honest with you, though. No. Like the board game, yes, but not really on iPhone. But I want to play exciting things. Do you know what I mean? Monopoly's a rainy day game. You know, it's not something. You know, there's so many other things I've played before it. You know.
Yeah, I hate Monopoly in real life, and I also hate it, and I don't like, because I hate it in real life, I suppose, I'm not particularly interested in playing it on a console. This is a good version, which got an 8 out of 10 from David McFerrin. So, and it's from EA, and it's perfectly good, but the problem is, it's not, as Damien says in his review, it lacks the tactile quality of real, and the emotional quality of real Monopoly, because in real Monopoly, there are these little boards, there's little objects that you can pick up, and there are people sitting around you, and you can smell their breath, and you can feel them nudging up, and that's such an integral part of the game.
Sure.
That without it, But as it goes, as an iPhone version goes, it's good. It's an 8 out of 10, so check it out if you want to. Song Summoner, it's a Square Enix game, came out. Let's see what that got. That 8 out of 10 from Tracy.
Okay.
So that's good. Music game. Oh My Word 2, yeah, it's quite a kind of obscure-ish game that's not bad. I think it got a 6. Sean White, Snowboarding. You a snowboarding game fan?
No, well, I used to be, back when it was... It's one of those genres that just sort of died. I mean, back in the day, it was almost as big as the skateboarding genre is now, and games like SSX and everything really commanded quite a lot of media attention and matching sales, I believe. But yeah, I suppose I could be tempted back into it if there was a good game. Is this a good game?
It's an award-winning game. Wow. It got a bronze award, 7 out of 10.
All right.
So it looks all right. But yeah, I'm not. I don't think I'll be playing it, but it doesn't look too bad at all. Cool. And I'm sure the graphics are nice and everything. Pediapedia, it's John Jordan reviewed. Looks fairly interesting. It's like a 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon game. On Wikipedia, but the problem is, he says, it's just too open.
Okay.
So there's not, you know, it needs rules to stop you just cheating, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever played the 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon game.
No, I haven't, actually.
Because I play that quite a lot. We could have a game now. Basically, what happens is, you know two actors,
uh-huh.
and then you have to get to them via other actors that they've been in films with. So I could say Brad Pitt and Christopher Walken. Could say, so I have to think of this, I'm not even going to bother.
Easy. Christopher Walken was in...
And Brad Pitt in True Romance, they're in a film together.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, so that's the game. And I actually really enjoy it, and it's fun. But even then, if I play it a lot with people, you find there are films that you... default to. They'll say two names and you'll go, right, how do I get to, like, Shrek for some reason is a classic. How do I get to Shrek? Because Shrek has had a number of sequels with a lot of actors in it. So because of that, it's a good kind of resource. And you find yourself just falling into these channels. And Pediapedia apparently is the same. Anyway. Beta Rater.
Yes.
5 out of 10.
Controversial, eh? Yeah, didn't expect that.
Yeah, because it's missing features that were in the PSP version, but that got 5 out of 10. Crossfingers, which you reviewed.
I did, yeah. I thought it was pretty good. I think it's another title that delivers on the promise that I have always maintained Moby Game has.
Yeah, so they'll be pleased after all their troubles with Mr. Timothy Langdale.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Timothy Langdale, in fact. It's not a proper doctor, though, is he? It's not a medical doctor. No. Can't save lives.
Only
take that, Langdale.
It can only ruin them.
Driver, we talked about that. And what did we say it got? 7 out of 10. That's what it got.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time we said that.
Yeah.
Shock Revelation, 7 out of 10. And I Dig It Expeditions, which got 9 out of 10.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, it's a puzzle game.
I've not heard of that one. That's
no, I don't. Yeah, that's I suppose the surprise of the week is that it's unknown. It's come from nowhere, and it's very good.
Okay.
So check that out. 9 out of 10. I Dig It Expeditions.
All right.
And thus concludes our review rundown of the week.
Brilliant. So have we nailed it? Is that us?
I guess so, yeah. We're kind of wandering in the dark now.
Yeah.
I'll just say, go to Pocket Gamer, I suppose, and read our various writings.
Come on, go to Pocket Gamer. It's an imperative. It has to happen. It's a command.
Yeah, you can. You can go, don't go. You know, just live your life. But the chances are, if you're listening to this, you probably have been... But, you know, why not go back? You can read things we say about people. Next time, when we do our review rundown, you can nod with recognition as we talk about reviews. So do that. Give us a rating on iTunes. You'll be able to do that twice a week from now on. So good for you. And with that, I'm sure Chris will be with us next time around. So with that, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.